Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. My co-host today is Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Tuesday, May 16th, 2023. And this is where I normally would say, "Hey, Dave, how you doing?" And he would respond back, "Well, I'm great, Melody. And did you know that today is Happy National Do Something Good for Your Neighbor Day?" And but since he's not doing that and I'm doing it, he's just running a little late, ladies and gentlemen. So he'll be here here very soon. But
happy I'm here.
You're here.
I am.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just about ready to do Happy National Do Something Good for Your Neighbor Day.
Oh,
but it depends
goodness.
On who those neighbors are.
Well, it really does, doesn't it?
If they're good neighbors,
love our neighbors,
you got a bad connection.
I do.
A little bit.
How's that?
Might be better. But I was going to say, if you have good neighbors, you're always doing something good for them. You know, it's just something we do. If it's a good neighbor, you do things because it's those one's not so good that you have to go out of your way.
Do it for them or something, or do something with them.
Why do I have this thing of State Farm going through my head? Like a good neighbor, State Farm.
Indeed.
All right, we'll let State Farm do it. We're still kind of losing you a little bit, Dave.
Oh, well, what would you like me to do?
I don't know. Todd, do you want to reconnect with them, maybe?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay, all righty. So anyway, you can, try to just display some kind of kindness to your neighbors and friends. But I think most of us do that to, we try to do good. So gold didn't want to do very good to us today. So let's go ahead and get to the gold prices. Down $25, fell down through 2000. It currently is at $19.91 at the New York spot price after market. Silver was down 34 cents at $23.84. Platinum was down $1 at $1,075. And palladium was down 29, $1,529. Now, the USDX today was stronger, 0.19, so not a whole lot, but it's 102.63. Crude oil was up 60 cents at 70.52. Paper markets today, they were down, they were coming back, and now they're closing down more than 300 points on the Dow. 336 to be exact, 33,012 on the Dow. S&P was down less than 1% at 4,109. NASDAQ was also down less than, barely moved, down 22 at 12,343. The European markets, they were all negative too. Most of them, you know, just by a few points, nothing major. Shanghai was down again, nothing major, 20 points. 10-year yield, I bet that's higher. Yes, it is. 3.534 for the 10-year yield. And natural gas was down 1%, at 2.351. 2.351. So there's been a lot of discouraging news on the home front. And I guess Home Depot came out with a pretty bad forecast. And those are the reasons supposedly why the Dow is lower. But we'll just have to see exactly the end of the day and bring you tomorrow real reasons why they could be down. It could be some of the things that we're talking about. But speaking of home builder, and I don't get this, Dave. Home builders are getting a big boost from the lack of existing homes for sale, and that appears to be outweighing some of the challenges that they're facing from financial markets. I mean, if you look to the mortgage rates and so forth and the loans, I mean, that's all in the negative territory in the first quarter. So builder confidence in the market for newly built single-family homes rose 5 points. So go figure, unless this one would be a lagging indicator. I don't know, but their confidence doesn't match the numbers that came out just we spoke about earlier this week or yesterday about some of those reports. But it's the fifth straight month of gains. And again, now we're getting mixed signals once again. It shows new home construction is taking on an increased role in the marketplace, because many homeowners with loans well below current mortgage rates are electing to stay put. It does keep the supply of existing homes at a very low level. You think it would push the price up, and I didn't think it would push buyers up. While the price of lumber has been falling since March, there are still supply shortages of building materials, Dave.
Well, let's see. Not any better now. In fact, now there are also tightening credit conditions for residential real estate development and construction due to the recent banking crisis and, of course, the higher interest rates. Of the National Association of Home Builders three indexes, the index components, current sales rose 5 points to 56. Sales expectations the next 6 months increased 7 points to 57. Buyer traffic climbed 22, but to just 33. So it appears the builders are beginning to benefit from a very lean existing home market. New listings in April were down nearly 22% year over year. That's according to Realtor.com. And with mortgage rates now double what they were a year and a half ago, some potential sellers may be reluctant to trade up, that is, sell their home for a bigger one and a new, more expensive mortgage. Home builder economist Bob Dietz noted in March, one-third of homes listed for sale were new homes in various stages of construction. That share from 2000 to 2019, before the onset of the pandemic, was about a 13% average. So he added, with limited available housing inventory, new construction will continue to be a significant part of prospective buyer search in the quarters ahead. So still a challenging time for the housing market.
Well, it certainly is. And, but yeah, it wasn't a surprise challenge, that's for sure. I think most everybody could see the writing on the wall. Anyway. Okay, retail sales up slightly. Oh, you got it. Ooh.
Delayed reaction.
Consumers barely kept up with inflation in April. We saw retail sales increase. Of course, they fell short of everyone's expectations. This all came from the Commerce Department today. The advanced sales report showed an increase of 0.4%. Now, that's below the Dow Jones estimate. Excluding auto-related figures, sales increased 0.4%. That was kind of in line with expectations. Now, these numbers are not adjusted for inflation. The headline increase equaled the 0.4 monthly rise in the consumer price index. On an annual basis, sales were up just 1.6, well below the 5% CPI pace. So we had a drop in gasoline sales. That kind of held back some of the spending figures. Sporting goods, music, bookstores posted a 3.3% decline. Furniture and home furnishings saw a 0.7% drop. Miscellaneous retail store retailers, they led gainers with a 2.4% increase. So what's a miscellaneous store retailer? Just a department store?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. That's I forget what that category is. It could be.
I would think it would be department stores, because they really aren't shown anywhere else. Yeah. Not furniture and so forth, or sporting goods. Food and drink sales, that climbed 0.6%, and we're up 9.4% on a 12-month basis. Yes, Americans like to eat. As I mentioned yesterday, if you look at some of the snack foods, businesses are making a killing on it, as they're killing the people with those treats. But anyway, Dave?
Well, I know my toddler grandsons are great patrons of that particular industry, much to our chagrin. We have economist Lydia Bosor observed that retail sales posted this modest rebound in April, but the gain mostly reflected higher prices. She said a sustained turnaround is unlikely with consumer fundamentals turning less supportive. Yet it was the first positive reading since January, and one that followed that 0.7% decline the month before. Consumers obviously still face a tough road ahead, with indications pointing to higher interest rates, and all bets are off when the NDER decides a recession has hit the country, even if it turns out to be weeks, months, or longer later than it began. Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic said yesterday that he thinks a rate hike would be more likely than the cuts that markets have been pricing before the end of the year. Sort of an outlier, but he is the mid-June meeting of the FOMC approaches. In any event, Cleveland Fed Pres Loretta Mester added that the Fed continues to be committed to returning inflation to its sacred 2% target.
Good luck on that one, guys. Well, they'll tell us it's there, but what is the reality of what we pay? That's in their little world. They need to go shopping with the rest of Americans. They need to come off their high horses and come down to earth and do the shopping where we shop, and then tell us that inflation is 2%.
It's a great idea, actually.
None of them do any shopping. They have all their all their errand runners.
Field trip at the next FOMC meeting.
Yeah.
Field trip to wherever, even Aldi.
Yeah, yeah. And then tell us that they're at a 2% inflation rate. It's just a joke. To me, I think this is a joke too, but you know, this is what I think senators in our great countries like to spend time on, like there isn't anything better to do, but they, executives from two of the three banks that failed appeared at the Senate Banking Committee this morning to respond to questions why their banks went under and what these regulators could have done to avoid the calamities. I mean, are you kidding me? Like they don't even know already. I mean, come on. What a waste of time. And then they're more concerned about their pay and how these senior executives were being rewarded more for short-term gains, like rising stock prices. Why don't they go to the, you know, the board? You know, why don't they go to their shareholders? I mean, it's just ridiculous. Then for ensuring their company's long-term health. I thought that's what these seasonal test requirements for banks were for. Or did they stop them?
No, they're still happening.
Yeah, they're still happening.
To check for systemic risks.
Yeah, so doesn't that mean that then whoever they give those to, which is probably somebody at the Federal Reserve or the Treasury, don't pay any attention to them. You know, they just listen to what the CEOs say. I mean, it's just poor management, and it's oh my gosh, it's just you know, if they want to look for any insider trading, that's fine. But when they find to do something about it, nobody ever does anything about anything. Sir, what?
No, go ahead.
Senator Brown, chair of the Senate Banking Committee, took aim at the executive compensation to open the hearing. That's all they care about. You're paying out bonuses until literally hours before regulators seize your assets to people in Ohio and around the country. This feels sickeningly familiar. Well, then do something about it. Instead of just bringing these people in, gee, what went wrong? Why'd you get paid so much? Gee, who are these people?
Well, there is supposedly some bipartisan support in the Senate among two Dems and two Repubs who've introduced a bill that would give the FDIC authority.
Oh, great. They're bankrupt. They don't have the money to pay if anything really went wrong. So give it to them. Is there good management of funds? Go ahead.
Well, they're talking about giving the FDIC authority to take back any pay made to executives in the 5 years leading up to a bank's failure.
That's not right either.
Well, you know, you got to do something. I mean, even you said it.
They already earned it. They already made it. And sometimes things can go wrong in just the last. Hey, if you're investing in the market and the market turns on you and so forth, that's the risk. But I mean, you know, it's, you know, these. But all of D.C. is for everything when everything is going good. They don't care about these, what they make and so forth when everything is going well. Look at Jamie Dimon. Why haven't they gone after his paychecks? So they're just never fair on anything. And they never get to the root of it. They never get to the root. I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
No, I mean, the problem is that it's just another example of congressional theater that, you know, this is, you know, they're always about a third of the Senate, for example, that's up for reelection every 2 years. That'll happen again next year. And this is part of the cycle of preparing for those election ads that you know, will make incumbent members look good, like they, you know, care about these issues and that they're sticking up for the little guy. But, you know, again, whether something like this bill has a shot in the House, I don't know. I guess we're going to find out if there, in fact, is bipartisan movement in the Senate. This could move forward.
And all these guys are going to do is hide it on the way. So I hear the music. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. Premiums are coming down a little bit on some items. I think we're heading into the Memorial Day doldrums. I don't think it's going to be a summer doldrums, but I do. It could be a Memorial Day. I was reading earlier today, Dave, that driving or the people taking vacations at Memorial Day is back to 2019. So it's going to be a very, very busy, busy, busy Memorial Day weekend. So I think I'll stay home. And give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. Again, Janet Yellen is issuing another dire warning about the debt ceiling, wanting Congress to raise it immediately before they run out of cash by early June. First, it was June 1st. Now it's early June. Next, it'll be by the end of June. But anyway, she says the default would crack open the foundations upon the financial system. It's very conceivable that we'd see a number of financial markets break, with worldwide panic triggering margin calls, runs, and fire sales. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Mention where gold would be. I can't. It would be 10,000 before you could blink an eye. It could be 10,000 before you would blink an eye if that went on. Yellen, she was speaking at the Independent Community Bankers of America Capital Summit. They said that the could lead to an economic downturn. No kidding. As bad as the Great Recession. No kidding. 8 million Americans losing their jobs. No kidding. And stock markets value falling about 45%. And this is what cracks me up. She's talking about a worldwide panic triggering margin calls, runs, and fire sales, and she's only saying the stock market's value is falling by 45%. Are you kidding me? If that first part happens, I'll guarantee you the stock market's value would fall by 80%, I would think. Dave?
Well, 45 or 80, it's still a ton of losses for not just Wall Street, but for Main Street, for people who whose retirement savings, lifetime savings in some cases, would be devastated and would take a couple of years at least, if not more, to regain their footing. Because after, that kind of debacle, all bets are off. In terms of what comes next. We're reading that staff from both sides of the congressional aisle have been working since Biden and McCarthy met last week to try to sort out a deal before Memorial Day. Both sides are suggesting, some in more direct terms than others, that there's little progress. But the fact that I don't know if it's going to be today, Friday, next week. This gamesmanship is getting old. I want to agree with humility that this is just like the other play chicken episodes, that they'll do it, that they'll eventually come to a deal, that they won't let the U.S. Default. I just hope they get it done sooner than later, because as time goes on, tempers are going to flare, things are going to be said that could make it harder to get a bill through both houses of Congress. So the warnings and the unprecedented economic and financial storm. I mean, it's serious stuff. Yes, hopefully by the end of this month, it will have turned out to be another example of cry wolf.
Well, Dave, this sounds like a very awful thing to say, but I wish they would default.
Well, I don't.
I do, because as devastating, as painful as it's going to be, we're going to have this default sooner than later. These issues have to be addressed. And are they going to be addressed at $31 trillion, or are they going to be addressed at $50 trillion? I'd rather have it addressed at 50, at 31 than 51 or 50. And it would expose, as nasty and devastating as it would be, where do we get our footing going forward? Has it peaked yet? I don't know. When they default, that's when we'll know, is when it's peaked, huh?
Has what peaked?
Our ability to continue with these great numbers of debt.
No, of course it hasn't peaked.
Where does it peak?
So, look at the Congressional Budget Office. They say it'll be well over 150% of GDP in 25, 30 years.
We're already at 112 or 120 or something, aren't we?
That's GDP? Held by the public, which
debt held by the public is the right number, not gross debt. That's over already over 100 event.
Yeah.
But still, it's big bucks. No question about
it
that.
It is, but how much worse is everything going to be at that point? And I mean, so get it done and get it over and start fresh as you can be. People aren't going to be in any better shape 20 years from now, 10 years from now than they are today. When we continue to have the inflation, is going to, they continue to bail everybody out, every so many years. They continue to bail the banks out over so many years. How much more blood can they get from the taxpayers? I mean, it's got to stop. Maybe a lot of these politicians would be exposed for who they are and what they've actually done to this nation. So, you know, as bad as it seems, maybe there's some positive in there, too. You know, we talk about how everyone, you hear every day that the U.S. has never defaulted on its debt. Well, maybe technically that's not true. By the most basic definition of default, not making agreed upon payments to those you owe, the U.S. has indeed defaulted, arguably on a couple of quick occasions. Talking point on the U.S. pristine credit record is a key bit of rhetoric for those arguing that not raising the debt ceiling, which would ultimately mean missing payments, the debt the government owes. The U.S. has failed to meet obligations in the past. In April, Treasury Janet Yellen, of course, she also said inflation was just transitory. But anyway, along with Powell, since 1789, the United States has paid all of our bills on time. It should stay that way, she said. Even the White House press secretary said the same thing. We've never failed to pay our bills. Washington Post, since the United States has never defaulted on its debt, no one knows exactly how bad the financial carnage would be if it did. Okay, so we've been talking about, well, maybe the U.S. has in the past the U.S. has failed to keep its financial word. In 1814, amid the war with the British, the Treasury couldn't come up with the cash to service its debt. Treasury Secretary Alexander Dallas admitting the dividend on the funded debt has not been punctually paid. A large amount of Treasury notes has already been dishonored. In 1933 and 1934, FDR's refusal to pay Treasury bondholders with gold, as agreed when the securities were sold, that represents a nullification of the contract that certainly qualifies as a default. And, Dave, again in 1979... Well,
yeah, more recently, 1979, Treasury briefly missed payments on about $122 million in Treasury bills, citing issues with computer technology. Investors were paid with interest. Now, what might be truer for government officials to say is not that the U.S. has never defaulted on its debt. Here comes the semantic games. Rather, it has never disclaimed its debt. Little nuanced argument there. Such a dramatic turning of the nation's back on previously incurred debts hasn't ever happened with Treasury debt. On the other hand, there have been episodes when the U.S. said it wouldn't pay debts that it was arguably on the hook for. One of the instances in this article was the money Cuba owed Spain after the U.S. took control of the island in 1898, Spanish-American War. Also in the 1840s, the U.S. refused to pay the debts of indebted states, which some foreign creditors thought should have been backed by the federal government. But for the record, most experts do think that failing to raise the debt ceiling could be anywhere from serious to catastrophic. We don't want to go back into that debate. It would be... It would be, let's say, unpredictable, especially the longer it would persist past the so-called X date when the U.S. runs out of cash. On the other side of the issue, some members of Congress argue the nation's public debt is so big Again, debt held by the public, already 100% of GDP, biggest since World War II. But threatening extreme measures such as not to raise the debt ceiling and defaulting in order to extract spending cuts is a legitimate tactic. Well, who knows? In the end, this, I think, will hopefully be beside the point. Melody and I may disagree on this issue. And at the rate we're going, claims about America's ironclad commitment to serving its debts appear pretty hollow. Surprised we still have as high a credit rating as we do. We're talking about big bucks here, and I guess even the rating agencies are paranoid about having a negative impact on the world financial markets.
Well, I think we're a little closer to defaulting on the debt back on 2011 than I think we are today. So, I mean, there was a lot of things going on back there in 08, 9, 10, 11 when our credit rating was lowered. And so, that was a lot scarier time. But anyway, we did talk a little bit about this yesterday about household debt hitting $17 trillion. It's a new record. And this is according to the latest Fed data. Americans are continuing to add to its spending heavily on their credit cards. Again, enormous financial pressures on the American families in this high inflation that we're experiencing. Persistent rises in the prices of essentials like food, rent, you know, household budgets go haywire. People borrow against their credit cards to pay for these necessities. Credit card debt now stands at $986 billion. You may as well say a trillion. Mm-hmm. It'll be a trillion by the end of the year. Remarkably, this figure stayed flat from the fourth quarter of 2022 to the first quarter of 2023. Yeah, I don't know how that figures out. Unless they come through with a revision. But anyway, historically, this period has seen a post-holiday decline in credit card balances. Okay, there's my reasoning behind it, because I guess after Christmas and everything, you just are tired of shopping maybe, Dave?
Tired of spending.
Credit card debt jumped 17% from a year ago. Aggregate limits on credit card accounts increased by $119 billion. And that's a 2.7% increase from the fourth quarter of 2022 levels. And in the first 3 months of 2023, total U.S. household debt rose by $148 billion, and that's up 0.9% from the fourth quarter of last year. Big numbers.
Big numbers indeed. I mean, in other signs of this increased debt burden, the Fed noted that every major category of consumer debt has seen an upward spike from the previous quarter. Every category. Mortgage debt, unpaid debt, topped $12 trillion. Student loan balances, $1.6 trillion. Auto loans, almost $1.6 trillion. Balances on home equity lines of credit rose by $3 billion. Overall, thanks to inflation, debt balances are now almost $3 trillion higher than they were at the end of 2019.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Does anybody, nobody understands those numbers. It's just huge.
I mean, $3 trillion figure, something of a reversal from the first 2 years of the pandemic, when a lot of people stayed home during these lockdowns, spending less than they would have otherwise. April 2020, savings actually reached their highest level ever, $6.42 trillion, driven by that restrained spending, plus the government stimulus payments. It's, as you said, Melody, it's a lot of money.
This was the report that I was thinking about earlier when we were talking about the home builder sentiment, how that has risen and so forth. Well, when these surges occurred during a slackening of mortgage financing.
Yeah.
62% lower than the same period last year. How can they be optimistic? The lowest since 2014. So that's what I mean. The number, it just doesn't.
You know, it's cherry picking, I think, and to some extent. When you're in it all the time, it might be hard to step back and see the big picture, the forest through the trees. But, it is pretty gosh darn easy to hear the music.
Yes, it is. And we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of other client businesses. Final segment. You can reach her at 1-800-375-4188. You know, I've said a couple times over past couple years, my personal least favorite too big to fail bank, and there aren't any favorites, but least favorite is Wells Fargo, which has agreed to pay, in my mind, a paltry $1 billion to settle a lawsuit defrauding shareholders about its progress in recovering from a series of scandals over its treatment of customers. A preliminary settlement of the proposed class action was filed late last night in Manhattan. Since 2018, Wells Fargo has operated under consent orders from the Federal Reserve and two other regulators requiring that it improve governance and oversight. Cap by the Fed, which can impede its ability to compete with its bigger rivals, JPMorgan Chase, Bank of America,
and Citigroup.
Well, I've been trying to climb out of crisis mode recently, believe it or not. Bob Marley's calming words keep replaying in my head at night. Don't worry about a thing, because every little thing gonna be all right. But, you know, as we head toward the last month of spring, I've been finding it hard to find a meaningful and timely topic to write about that doesn't entail some impending disaster, tragedy, or danger even. There's the inflation crisis, for one. Fed Governor Michelle Bowman traveled all the way to Germany last week to tell a crowd attending an ECB symposium that the Fed will likely have to continue raising interest rates if price growth in the jobs market doesn't further cool down. There's the debt crisis. The government's another day closer to X day when it runs out of extraordinary measures to continue paying its bills, when global financial markets start to implode. But with President Biden and House Speaker McCarthy delaying until this week their next negotiating powwow, and now Biden may cut his G7 visit short because of it. I'm waiting, though, to write about that as well. So, the banking crisis, then. That's what I'm sticking with. You know, on last Friday's What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog, I asked, is PacWest Bank the next to fail? Well, we still don't know the answer to that, but we do know that shares of PacWest were under pressure again last week after the struggling regional bank announced that deposit outflows resumed earlier this month. Stock was down 23%, further extending its recent declines. Entering the day, PacWest shares had already fallen 40% this month and more than 70% for the year. Bank said in a securities filing that its deposits declined about 10% during the week of May 5th. PacWest said the majority of those outflows came after media reports that said the lender was exploring strategic options, which many took to mean including a sale. Bank also said it was able to fund those deposit withdrawals with cash on hand. That is $15 billion of available liquidity. Well, if true and correct, and that's compared with just $5.2 billion in uninsured deposits, the update marks a change from May 4th when PacWest said that it wasn't experiencing out-of-the-ordinary deposit flows and that total deposits had actually increased since the end of March. During the first quarter, PacWest's total deposits declined 17%, and the bank said it would use these asset sales to reshape its balance sheet. And several Wall Street analysts speculated that the most recent outflows were coming from the bank's venture capital customers. John Alfstrom at RBC Capital Markets said, while the deposit news is not what the company wants to report, if the outflows are truly from the venture capital depositors and not the core bank, that's better news, despite the total higher outflow disclosure. Well, following PacWest's filing yesterday, Western Alliance released its own update, reporting that total deposits have grown by $600 million since early May. Shares of that bank were up slightly. Elsewhere, share of Zions Bancorp dipped 3.5%, and the Spider S&P Regional Banking ETF down 1.4%. This, again, late last week. Regional banking sector has all been under pressure since early March, when concern about the impact of higher interest rates led to that run on deposits, which was seized by regulators. New York Signature Bank soon followed, and then San Francisco's First Republic was seized and sold, incredibly, to five-time felon and too-big-to-fail bank J.P. Morgan Chase. And at a steep discount in the wee hours before the markets opened on May 1st. And now, well-known economist Mohammed L. Orion says the U.S. has entered the second stage of the banking mayhem. He actually outlines four ways to avoid a significantly more damaging third phase of financial unrest. In an op-ed published last week, the chief economic advisor to Alliance
opined that the first phase of the chaos, when depositors took their money from poorly managed lenders and caused the trio of bank failures, has actually stabilized. L. Orion was no doubt referring to the demise of Silicon Valley, Signature, and First Republic banks. And he added the current phase, which focuses on funding cost and balance issues of less problematic banks that happen to operate in a highly unsettled neighborhood, can also be stabilized. Indeed, it must, if we are to avoid a third phase entailing considerably more financial economic damage. The good news, L. Orion believes, is that the U.S. is unlikely to see another traumatic institutional collapse similar to SVB's. Now, we shall see, won't we? And that's thanks largely, he says, to the federal government's handling of the SVB failure by suggesting unlimited insurance on deposits and opening another funding window at the Fed for lenders. But he added, U.S. regional banks still operate with mismatches between their short-term liabilities and longer-term assets. Their balance sheets are further hampered by shaky commercial real estate loans, which Melody and I talked about last week. L. Orion continued that this second phase can be contained. First, banks have to be careful in what they say, and generally have to have very responsive communications with investors. Second, the Fed must strengthen its supervision regime. Third, public-private resolutions for banks need to be made to work to a tighter timeline if needed. Fourth, public sector needs to assure markets that it will work to revamp both the deposit insurance system and the regulation of banks erroneously deemed to involve no systemic threat. Doing so, he warns, is necessary if the U.S. is to avoid a significantly more damaging phase of the banking turmoil. By the way, in the time that I researched and wrote this article, PacWest shares, which opened at $4.78, hit a high of $4.90 before falling to $4.70. About 2 hours later, a year ago, it was trading at $30.50. And Bob says, don't worry about a thing. I wish. Hey, our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. It features Doug Nolan's weekly credit bubble bulletin blog and Apothecary Herb's Wendy Wilson's Food for Thought column on modern alchemy. It's Melody's weekly financial market recap, and I have an article called Telltale Sign of Recession Flashing Red. Now, you know what they say. Past performance does not guarantee future results. What we can say, however, is that some statistical measures are better at predicting the future than others that make investors' lives easier. And one such metric that's been capturing the attention of economists and investors for over 60 years is the New York Fed's recession probability tool. Writer Sean Williams explains this indicator as the difference in yields between the 3-month and 10-year Treasury bonds, the spread, to forecast how likely it is that a recession will come to pass in the coming year. A normal yield curve, as we know, is sloped upward and to the right, showing bonds with longer maturities of 10, 20, 30 years with higher yields than bonds scheduled to mature sooner. You know, 90 days, 1, 2, 3, 5 years even. Kind of what we typically see in a healthy economy. Troubles in the economy stir up, the yield curve tends to become a little inverted. That is, shorter-term bonds have higher yields than longer-term bonds. A yield curve inversion doesn't guarantee a forthcoming recession. But Williams and others before him note that every recession since World War II has been preceded by a significant yield curve inversion. According to the latest New York Fed's recession probability indicator, there's a 68.2% chance the country will enter a recession in the next year. Williams notes that's the highest probability of a recession occurring in the next 12 months in over 40 years.
Not coincidentally, he says, we're also witnessing the largest yield curve inversion between the three-month and 10-year note in more than four decades. Since 1959, there have been eight instances when the New York Fed's recession tool has exceeded a 40% probability of an economic downturn. With the exception of October 1966, every other previous time a reading has been above 40%, the economy has dipped into recession. That's 57 years, ladies and gentlemen, without a miss. And one of the reasons recessions matter is because no bear market, stock market, has bottomed since World War II before the National Bureau of Economic Research has officially declared a recession. In other words, Williams warns, the message from the New York Fed tool is that the Dow Jones, S&P 500, and NASDAQ composite indexes may not have seen their bear market lows just yet. Remember, too, that the recession probability indicator is just one of the several metrics that signal potential trouble ahead for Wall Street and Main Street. Williams points to one of them, money supply, which he notes has been doing something truly historic on both sides of the aisle. The broader M2 money supply, which accounts for everything in M1, which, you know, cash, bills, coins, traveler's checks, and adds money market funds, savings accounts, and CDs below 100,000, skyrocketed by a record 26% annualized during the pandemic. As of March 2023, money supply had declined 4.1% year over year, which marks its largest drop in 90 years. Although, as Williams explains, it's possible the decline in M2 is completely benign, given how much money supply has expanded during the pandemic, the precedent for M2 declines of at least 2% isn't rosy. In the four previous times that M2 has dropped at least 2%, three recessions and a deposit panic ensued. Even though two of those events occurred before the Fed was even created, the other two happened about 100 years ago, declining money supply has generally been an alarming sign. Now, with a couple of exceptions, the total amount of loans and leases outstanding from commercial banks, which William says is worth keeping an eye on, has continued to climb. There are, however, four times William notes when bank lending retraced by at least 1.5% since 1973. In three of those instances, the S&P 500 lost around half its value. The fourth occurred in just the past few weeks. Even the Fed sounding the alarm. When the meeting minutes were released from its March meeting, the FOMC included a warning that a mild recession was forecast for later this year. Now, again, no forecasting tool is perfect, but historically speaking, U.S. stocks have suffered most of their bear market losses after, not before, a recession has been declared. So if you're thinking it's time to insure yourself and family against the high probability of a coming recession and its many impacts, well, you would be right. For all your physical gold and silver needs, call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday, I hope. Scheduled for jury duty, but we'll see how that goes. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson, Apothecary Herbs. Thanks also to producer Todd Waite and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye. That's too bad.